From APM in Los Angeles, I'm Noelle King, in for Ben Johnson, exploring the latest on how technology is changing our lives and our society. It has been 6 years since Apple threw open the virtual doors to the iPhone App Store, and now, well, apps are ubiquitous. But a new report on mobile apps from the company Comscore finds that most smartphone users in the U.S., around 65% of us, don't download any apps in an average month. Julie Osk, vice president at Forrester Research, says the apps that get lots of downloads are usually the ones attached to a particular company, like a bank or an airline, that make life easier.
When we talk about why companies build apps and why consumers download apps, companies are building apps for their best customers, the ones that engage with them most frequently. And the companies that are doing apps really well are really figuring out, like, what are those mobile moments in which I really need to serve my customers?
And as for the dream of building a wildly successful app that makes you a millionaire?
If you're an app developer and you download an app, let's say that more than 5 or 10,000 people download, you should consider that a win. If you're fortunate enough to, you know, build the next Instagram, WhatsApp, or Viber, then you've really hit the jackpot. There's a million apps in the App Store today, and there's a handful of them that generate meaningful revenue.
That was Julie Osk of Forrester Research. Next month, Microsoft is expected to unveil a new version of its Windows operating system. Since it released Windows 8 a couple of years ago, Microsoft has gotten a new CEO, Satya Nadella. And as Marketplace's David Gura reports, the new version of Windows could say a lot about his vision for the company.
Microsoft's customers didn't exactly embrace Windows 8, especially its corporate customers. Al Gillen is a tech analyst with IDC.
If anything, the operating system tended to get in the way more than help you get your work done.
Windows 8 was designed for touchscreens, but many of us still rely on regular old PCs with keyboards. Microsoft analyst Brendan Barnicle is with Pacific Crest Securities, and he says that while the next version of Windows will look different, in a way, that's beside the point.
You know, I think the biggest difference is going to be around distribution, where we start to see something that's genuinely a cloud-based version.
Microsoft's new CEO has adopted a cloud-first strategy. Satya Nadella has also made some personnel changes since he started. Morningstar's Norman Young says Nadella remade Microsoft's engineering department. That is reflected in the timing of this release.
Usually, development times for operating systems for Microsoft took multiple years.
Analysts say Microsoft is moving toward introducing a new version of its operating system annually. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Recently, a bunch of the big tech companies have released their diversity statistics, the demographic breakdowns of who they employ. They show an overwhelmingly white male workforce. One company, though, is doing an okay job, Pandora. The music streaming service announced this week that 51% of its employees are men and 49% are women. In 2014, it probably shouldn't be remarkable, but it is. Adrienne LaFrance has been reporting on diversity in tech. She's an editor and tech reporter at The Atlantic. Adrienne, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So we get the impression from your reporting that when it comes to diversity, at least on the male-female spectrum, Pandora is doing something right. What did you find? What are they doing differently?
We do know a little bit about what Pandora has been doing. They have an internal collective called Pandora Women. They do public speaking events. They spend time in mentorship roles for one another and then do some community outreach as well. So there's an effort, it seems, to educate other members of the community, especially other women, when it comes to some of the outreach that isn't necessarily happening elsewhere.
It sounds like that is an attempt to address the question of making women feel comfortable in the workplace, making sure that they don't leave once you've got them in.
I think so. That's a really good point. I mean, I think something that comes up all the time in terms of my conversations with people in tech and in other industries, too, is this question of flexibility in the workplace. And especially for women, I think that's something that helps keep them in jobs and enables them to take more high-level jobs as their careers progress.
I was speaking to an African-American woman, an engineer recently, and she said, being a woman is tough. Being African-American is tough in tech. Being an African-American woman is kind of like the perfect storm. Is all of the debate and the talk about women in tech sidelining the issue of just how few African-Americans and other minorities are also being employed by these companies?
I think so. I mean, often there's this focus on men versus women in tech. The sort of unspoken thing is that when we talk about women in tech, too often we're just talking about white women in tech. It's sort of like there's so many different issues to tackle at once that often race issues get lost in this conversation. And that's something that a lot of people are trying to move to the forefront, I think.
You've been reporting on this for a while. And I wonder, when these companies release their demographic breakdowns, does it actually do anything? Or is this just kind of a way for companies to say, we need to do a better job and hopefully we will?
It's hard to say for now. I mean, just this summer, we've seen so many companies release this kind of data. And it's sort of taken on a little bit of a public relations sheen because they all do it the same way. They, you know, release these really sort of slick charts and they write a blog post about it. And it's sort of like, okay, now we've done it. We've shared our data. And so I think one of the things certainly I'll be watching for is whether companies are committed to releasing updates and engaging in conversations about what they're trying to do. And more importantly, what's actually working.
Adrian LaFrance is an editor and technology reporter at The Atlantic. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, you might remember that last month we told you about Hitchbot, a child-sized robot created by Canadian researchers that set out to hitchhike nearly 4,000 miles across Canada. It was part of a social experiment. Could the cute but defenseless robot survive on the kindness of strangers? It could, and it did. Hitchbot has reached Canada's Pacific coast just 3 weeks after starting out. Along the way, the little robot picked up more than 30,000 Twitter followers and was brought along to a wedding in British Columbia. I'm Noelle King, and that's Tech on the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.